So next time I'll be more clear too. Every row has their own bucket, so you don't have to pass them across aisles. They should all end up in this aisle and these aisles here. So on these sides, that way it's easier for folks to pick up. So thank you guys for doing that. I know KFC, like, you're like, but I wanted free chicken. Like, maybe we'll have free chicken sometime, huh? That make you hungry for chicken? I thought about coming out with a bucket of chicken and be like, oh, you guys don't get any, sorry. I thought that would be rude of me. We are starting out in the series about Galatians, and I want to encourage you. I am ADHD, if you have not figured that out by now, and I cannot preach a sermon series where I go through like verse by verse. I just can't do it. I've tried it in the past, and I end up coming to the church, and I'm like, hey, by the way, I'm just bored. I can't do this anymore. So I'm not going to do that. I am going to go through Galatians, and we're going to cherry pick some ideas and some concepts, and we're going to talk about those ideas and concepts. And so I want to encourage you this month, as we go through Galatians, for you to go through verse by verse. And so what I'm asking everybody in our church to do is to consider going through the book of Galatians every single week for this entire month. So you would read the whole book once a week, all the way through. You could do a chapter a day, skip one day out of the week, and keep doing that all week long. But as you do it, I want you to keep your heart and your mind open to what God is saying in this, and to start to look for little lessons and little pieces that you can place together, and for you to start to underline and highlight stuff in your YouVersion app, and to start to really get this word of God in your heart. Because I promise you, if you start to put God's word in your heart every single day, it will do 10 times what you listening to my sermon once a week will do. I promise you that. It'll 10 times whatever God is already doing in your life, it'll take it to the next level. So start putting his word in your heart. We're going to start with the book of Galatians. Everybody good with that? Say, yes, Kent. If you're online, give me a thumbs up. All right. Yes, I got a yes, Kent. Thank you. I appreciate that. Somebody out there is super. Thanks, Joel. Yeah, look at you all over the place, right? You guys are nuts. All right. A few weeks ago, my whole family had gotten in the car. I think we were going to get shakes. Does anybody ever go to get shakes? Like, we're just like, let's go get shakes. And so we all load up in the car and we went out, and man, we had a great time. We come back. It's dark at night. Like, we've been out so late and it's dark, and we come home, and I do what I've done a million times. I pull up into the driveway and I go like this. You know what my finger's hitting when I do this? The garage door button, right? Like, I am like, bing, and I'm hitting the garage door button, and the garage door doesn't go up. I'm like, ah. So I go, bing, garage door doesn't go up. What do you do at that point? Anybody know? You start, bing, 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 right? As hard, as fast as you can. And then you're like, you go, bing, you do the hold button. You're like trying everything you can to get the garage door will not go up. So I get out. I'm like, it's okay, baby. I got this. You know, she's like, are you sure? I'm thinking maybe the battery's just out in the little thingy, the remote control. So I go up on the side of the garage and I type in our code, 1234, enter. All right, now you all know our code. No, it's not that, it's 4321. That's the actual code. So I wouldn't want to give that away to you, you know? That's not it either, I'm just joking. So I put the code in, I hit enter, and nothing happens again. Now I know I'm in trouble. Because here's the, if you guys are like me, you're thinking, well, Kent, don't you have a key to your house, right? Anybody thinking that? Like, Kent, don't you have a key? You would think that would make all the difference, right? Having a key. I did have a key, but have you ever heard the phrase, don't leave any rock unturned? Have you ever heard that before? Now, here's how my wife thinks of this. She likes to think of don't leave any lock unturned, all right? And so in our house, when we purchased it, it happened to come with one of those hotel locks, that like the little loopy thing that goes around the ball, and you can open your door about 3 inches and that's it. And my wife leaves no lock unturned. And so I go up and I unlock the 50 locks that we have on the door, and I open the door, and the little bolt lock thingy is on. And I can only get it 3 inches open. I go around, I start going around the whole house, and I'm trying to slide windows up. I can't get, and all the windows are locked because don't leave any lock unturned. I go to the back door, and my dogs are inside mocking me. They're like, sucker. they're like looking at me and laughing, because not only is the door locked, but also the little wood thing that you put down, the wood thing's down. Ah! And all I could think is, I'm going to have to break a window or something, right? Like, I'm going to have to break into this house. And so I go back around and I think as like everything, I try opening the door just a crack and like sticking my finger in to pop the thing. Nothing will work to get it open, right? I cannot get it open. And then I finally think of this. The least damaging thing I can possibly do is to just break the door down, right? Like if I just put all my 300 pounds into that door, surely that little metal thing that's got two screws in it is not going to hold up against this beauty. You know what I mean? So, because I've always been like, those things are just a joke. That's just to make you feel better about your hotel room, right? So I open the door and I back up. I did make sure that my kids and my wife were not around when I did this in case I looked like a fool. And I ran at it as hard as I could. And I put my shoulder into it. Have you ever heard the statement of when like an immovable object meets an unstoppable force? You ever heard that before? That was not the case. I was not an unstoppable force that day. I hit the door as hard as I could. Like, for real, my shoulder hurt for a week after this. And I hit it, and the door just did not budge. It was like concrete, as hard as I could. I was like, ah, ah. Jenny's like, are you okay? I'm like, I'm fine, babe. No big deal, right? Because I'm not getting this door open. And then I'm like, what am I going to do? Because I'm going to have to break a window. What? Let me ask you this question. What do you do when you're locked on the outside with no way in? What do you do when you're locked on the outside with no way in? I'll tell you what I did, because I'm a stinking genius, all right? Probably my wife thought of this, actually. But I realized that we have a shed out back, and it is not locked. And I realized that there are saws in the shed, and I realized that I actually have a saw that's designed for cutting metal called a hacksaw. And so I sent my wife out because you know there's no hope of me finding that thing in the dark, right? And so my wife goes out, finds the hacksaw, comes back, and for the next 15 minutes, it's funny to me that nobody called the cops on me, because I am literally out there hacksawing my way into our house, right? Like, I'm like, hey, good to see you guys, I'm not doing anything. Just look the other, nobody calls the cops, nobody cares in our neighborhood. So I cut through the metal until it breaks open and I'm able to get in, right? And I was thinking about this idea of what do you do when you're locked on the outside? Because it's one thing, we all know what it's like to be locked out from a house. We all know what it's like to be locked out from a car. But here's where I started going with this. What do you do when you feel locked out from God? You ever felt that before? You ever felt like you grew up going to church, and there was a time where maybe you went to youth group and you did some stuff, God kind of seemed real to you. And then you slowly just slipped away and you started hanging out with people that didn't care about God, and you started dating that one girl. Remember that one girl? And then you started drinking, and then you became a part of the sorority, and you started doing stuff you said you'd never do. And like, your life, I know sororities, what do you do? You feel locked out from God. And now you're back trying church out, and you're trying it one more time, and you're like, I don't feel like I get, like, I feel like I'm just hitting this brick wall. Like, I'm putting all my weight into it and nothing's happening. Maybe for you, that's not the story. Maybe for you, you have been very close to God, but you just feel like you've gone through this desert period where, like, you've been close to Him and you've known Him, but when you try to read the Bible, it just seems like nothing happens. And when you talk to other people, you just feel kind of almost like devoid of emotion when you think, and you just feel locked out from God. What do you do? I don't know what your circumstance is, but I bet money that because I felt this so much in my life. I bet money that you have felt locked out from God, and what do you do? Can I tell you what I think most of us do in this scenario? What most of us do when we feel locked out from God is we try and be better, right? I just need to be better. Some of you are back in church because you wanted to be better. Like you grew up, you had a little bit of a semblance of church in your life and you kind of knew that that was a place you could find something. And so you came back to church because you want to be better. And you're trying to be a better father and you're trying to be a better husband or you're trying to be a better wife or you're trying to be a better mother and you're trying to stop cussing so much and you're trying to stop gossiping and you're trying to be better and better and I don't want to lie and I don't want to do this. And what we think is that if we can just get our lives under control, that we can fix the problem. But you know what? There's a problem with that. Because the problem is that's not how it works. And you already know it because you've been trying your whole life to do that and it hasn't worked yet. Right? You haven't been able to be better. You haven't been able to figure it out. Now, if I could, I wanted to give us kind of a framework, a theological word for you to be able to think through this about, because what we're actually talking about is that piece of you that feels locked out from God. It has a specific name. It is called righteousness, all right? So righteousness is, like I know most of you, if you grew up in a church where they ever used the word righteousness or being righteous, you knew, you had that old lady in your mind or that old man in your mind who like wore the suit or the really nice dress and their hands were all knuckly and their hair was super gray and they were righteous. And like you knew that lady had never said a cuss word in her life. Right? And you knew that man had never looked at anything he should ever not look at in his life. And you thought that person is righteous. But I need to tell you, that's not what righteousness means. Now that person may be righteous, but what righteousness means is just doing the right thing. And what I'm telling you is, in a moment, we're going to look at this, and Paul is going to tell us how righteousness can lock us into things. This idea of us trying to be righteous, it can also lock you out of things. The idea works on both sides. And so here's what I wanted to ask you real quickly, because if we're going to talk about righteousness, there's a question that comes in with all of this. If righteousness is doing right things, how do you know what's right? Right? I mean, that is a huge deal in our culture right now. Have you ever heard somebody say this? You do what you do. Right. You live your own life or truth, right? It is all about me. It's all about what I believe, what truth I believe, whatever I think is right. And we live in a world right now where that is how we know what's right. Right? Would you agree with that? That's how people in our world define what's right. There is a serious problem with that. Because if what I think is right is like imposes on you something terrible, it doesn't matter because that's my truth. That's my right. That's my life. You can't tell me anything else. I had a girl one time who told me this. She had been abused as a young girl. She held to this philosophy. And I said, can I just ask you a question? That person who abused you, it was something they enjoyed doing. They wanted to do. It was their desire. But if you believe that it's you do you, whatever you believe to be truth is truth, isn't there a problem there that person could abuse you because for them, that was true, that was right, it was something they loved to do? Doesn't there have to be some ultimate standard that's outside of us that tells us what's right and wrong? And I need to tell you today, I just need to be really honest with you, I come to the table with a bias about this. And my bias is that there is some ultimate truth that tells us what's right and wrong. My bias is that there is a God who actually loves us and has wanted to interact with humanity, and he has given us some standards by which we can know right and wrong. Do you know what the Bible calls this? The Bible calls it the law, right? Now, let me just give you some instances of law, okay? So I need you to say woo after each of these, all right? So here we go. This is the first law that I want to tell you about. You should not murder people. Can I get a woo? Yeah, that's good, right? Nobody wants you. You should not be an adulterer. Can I get a woo on that? Woo! All right. You should not lie. Can I get a woo? You should not steal stuff. You shouldn't be greedy. Woo! There we go. You shouldn't take advantage of the poor. Woo! Right. Can I ask you a question? Did any of you who woo, have you ever broken one of those? I love that. Yeah, baby, we all have, right? See, I want to tell you, this is the problem. Remember, we're talking about being locked out from God. Most of us think that I need to be better. I need to just do better. And here's the problem. What we're trying to do, what we're expressing is an old biblical idea that we may not even know, is that I need to be righteous. I need to obey the law. And here's the problem. Most of us think if I can be good, that equals obey the law, then I'll be good with God, right? That's what we're saying. If I can just be good, then I'll be good with God. And I want to take you to the Apostle Paul, where he does this eloquent job of showing us how you cannot be good enough. Listen to this. We're going to jump into Galatians. If you have your Bibles, open up to that. Galatians chapter 3. If you have the YouVersion app, I would encourage you to open that up. Get it open. We're going to be in this passage, Galatians chapter 3. I also want you to start getting to where Galatians is, because you need to read it this week, all right? So Galatians chapter 3, verse 23 through 25. Here we go. Now, as you're getting there, let me just tell you this. Paul is talking, he's been talking about the promise that was coming to Israel. And he says that Abraham, God had given him this promise that there would be this moment in time where faith would enter the world. And it was a promise that landed on faith, and it was a promise that still today is by faith. And this is what he says in Galatians 3, 23 through 25. He says, before the coming of this faith, the culmination of this promise that God had made to Abraham, he says, before that comes, we were held in custody under the law, locked up until the faith that was to come into the world would be revealed. So the law was our guardian until Christ came, that we might be justified by faith. Now that this faith has come, we are no longer under a guardian. Did you hear what Paul said in there? He said we are held in custody, right? We're held in custody under the law. We were locked up until the faith that was to come would be revealed. So the law was our guardian until Christ came, that we might be justified by faith. Now that is a lot of words. Can I get an amen? Amen. As you're like, what does that even mean? Can I give you a framework that hopefully you all know that will help you understand what he just said? Can you leave that one up there, Christy? I'm sorry. Thank you. Isn't Christy doing awesome? Yeah, our tech people. Our tech and production people are incredible at this church. So let me give you an illustration and a way to think about this, all right? Have you guys ever seen the movie Annie? You guys ever seen the movie Annie? Do you remember Miss Hannigan, right? Yeah, Miss Hannigan is the guardian of Annie, is this little orphan girl. And you want to sing with me? The sun will come out tomorrow. Bet your bottom dollar that... Come on, people, what is... I just wanted to sing him, turn my sermon into a musical. Did you? There'll be, I'm just kidding. remember Miss Hannigan, here's little Annie and all these girls and they're orphans in this orphanage. And Miss Hannigan, you remember her? I love the old one because Miss Hannigan's walking around, she's sloshy drunk and she's got a cigarette in one hand and she's yelling at the girls and she's telling them, clean it, girls gotta sleep, clean it up, right? And she is the guardian of these children who are orphaned. Who is their protector? She is the one that they are underneath, and she is a cruel mistress to them, right? What Paul is saying is that you and I have been locked up under the guardianship of the law. That all of the right, all of the good, all of the evil that you learn from the law, it doesn't set you free. What law does, and the law is good. Listen, it's not like Miss Hannigan. The law, it's good. But it doesn't bring you freedom. It actually locks you up. But how does it do that? How does the law lock you up? It's because all law does, look at this, all law does is it shows you that you aren't and can't be perfect. Because you can't be perfect, you end up being locked up. Or even worse, feeling locked out. See, Paul is saying, that God gave us the law as a guardian. It showed us exactly what God thought was right and wrong, good and evil. It is this law that locks us up. We cannot be perfect. I was thinking about this. Did anybody pay taxes recently? Did anybody finish your taxes and get them in? Anybody got the extended deadline and you're still waiting to pay your taxes? Maybe somebody out there. Every year we have a weird thing as Americans, right? You got to pay your taxes. Now, I need to tell you something that I have never been able to do. Maybe somebody out there is a genius and you're better than me. But I always, end up on either two sides of taxes. I either pay way too much in, and the government gets to take my money for a year, and then they give me a refund. And most of us are like, yeah, yeah, I got a refund, but most of the time, that's your money that they've been holding on to, right? So they take too much of my money, I give too much away, and then I get it back, or I have done this where I underpay. Anybody underpaid? And you get that tax bill at the end of the year, and you're like, oh, how are we going to do that, right? And you're figuring it up, and you're like, I think that's wrong. They fudged the numbers. And you underpaid, and now you owe a lot. I have never, this is what I've never been able to do. I've never been able to thread the needle and come away figuring up my taxes and go, we owe nothing. And we're not getting nothing back. It's a zero. We did it perfectly. We kept the IRS tax code to the nth degree, and we are perfect. Has anybody ever done that? No, y'all are sinners, man. Like, I don't, I'm just kidding. But it's not far off, because that's what the law is like. See, the law keeps, you can't, you'll never get it. You will, this is what happens in the law too often. We either go too far and we become legalistic. You've known people who are legalistic, right? They are constantly watching everybody, and they're judgmental, and they're constantly looking for where you mess up. And you'll know if you grew up in a church like this, because you felt like you had to come and repent every single week. And the preacher, like, you walk out feeling like hell is at your doorstep. Like, you are, it's over for you. And you grow up in this. And I'm not trying to badmouth people, but this is kind of the culture of how some people take Christianity. And it is this legalistic thing. And the law can drive. This is what Jesus was. You know, Jesus would be like, hey, I know it's the Sabbath, and like nobody's supposed to work, but there's this person who needs healed, so I'm going to heal them. And guess what? People get mad that he was healing somebody because it was on the Sabbath when you weren't supposed to work. And you know, if you're healing somebody, that's work. And Jesus would say, don't you know that God said he desires mercy, not sacrifice? So see, when we live in a legalistic way where we're just trying to be better all the time, and we're just trying to keep the law to the nth degree, guess what? You will go too far. You will give too much. And there will be something owed back because you paid in too much. You were legalistic. But the flip side is just as bad. We don't go far enough and we live in sin. And we don't go far enough, and we just live in this world, and one way you're locked up and the other way you're locked out, and it feels like you can't win. What do you do? What do I do then if I want to get unlocked with God? Because you're still in the predicament, and I'm still in the predicament where I still feel like there's this door that's locked and I can't get in. Can I take you back to what Paul said in verse 23? Now, he continues this theme. You need to read Galatians, because this theme is throughout the whole thing. But I want to take you to what he said that maybe you missed it. I highlighted it just for a moment, but he says, before the coming of this faith. Remember I told you he was talking about a promise that had been made, and the promise was that faith would come, that there would be, that Abraham believed the promise by faith, and that the promise would be fulfilled, and those who engage in that promise, in the fulfillment of it, would engage in it by faith, not by what they did, how good they could be. It would be by faith. He says this, we were held in custody under the law, locked up. Some of you are locked out. Until the faith that was to come would be revealed. We were locked up. See, Paul is saying that the right, the good, all the law, the good and evil that you're trying to live by and avoid, you can't do it. Because it's not by living out the law. It's by faith. That's what, now here's the problem. Faith is a weird thing for us, isn't it? Faith is a funny word, because what most of us mean when we talk about faith is we talk about it as belief. Like, I believe this thing. I consciously have made this decision. And some of you would say, it's just blind faith. I would disagree with that. I would say there's lots of ways to put your faith, but there is still a place to take a step. It's just like, I can't prove to you that George Washington was a real person, right? But I do put my faith in the fact that George Washington was a real person. I can't 100% without a doubt prove to you that Jesus was a real person, but there's enough evidence to me from history to put my faith in it. And what we most of the time mean is that I believe, I assent to this belief system, this idea. But faith is more than just belief. Listen to this. Faith has an element of trust, because faith moves into your body. Faith moves into your body. Now, some of you are like, that is weird, Kent. What does that even mean? Can I tell you what I mean by that? I'm going to share another story, all right? A few weeks ago, we went back to Kansas. That's where I'm from, if you didn't know, from Kansas. the Wizard of Oz, that's the land of dreams, right? Kansas, it's beautiful. You need to know two things about Kansas before I tell this story, all right? First thing about Kansas is this. Have you guys ever, like, you when it's really windy here, do you just hate it? Are you like, oh, it's just so windy? Yeah, that is a normal day in Kansas, all right? Because there's no trees and it's flat, all right? It just, the wind blows like 30 miles an hour every single day. And when it's windy in Kansas, it's blowing like 50 miles an hour with gusts up to like 60. I mean, one time when I was in high school, they closed school because of wind. That's how crazy it is, all right? I'm home. It's super windy. Also, Jenny's parents live out in the country, and they live on a dirt road. It's 2 miles out on a dirt road because in Kansas, we don't pave our country roads. We just put dirt on it. Actually, the dirt's already there, and you just drive on it. Like when I got here, I was like, why do the Kentucky people put asphalt on all their dirt roads? And I get it now because you have hills. We don't have them. It's Kansas, windy, dirt roads, all right? My mother-in-law, we get there, and she says, Kent, I bought a motorcycle. I need you to ride it back from town for me. I was like, what? Back to, it's a 15-minute ride on this motorcycle, right? And it's windy in Kansas, and there's dirt roads that I'm going to have to ride on. And here's the deal. You may not know this, but I used to ride motorcycles. Can I get a... That's right. I used to ride motorcycles. When Jenny and I actually got married, I had a motorcycle. I would ride up and I'd be like, get on, baby. And if you've ever had a motorcycle, you know you go fast when the girl's on the back just so she'll hug you tighter, right? And I'm like, come on, woo! She's like, oh, you're scaring me. And so I got this motorcycle. I've ridden motorcycles for a long time. I was like, no problem, Sue. I'll ride the motorcycle back to town, from town. So we go into town. I believe in my heart I can do this. The guy's like, have you ridden a motorcycle before? I'm like, yeah, I've ridden it. Yeah, it's no problem, man. He puts me, it's a little 250 Suzuki, not a big motorcycle. He puts me on it. I start, I'm like, it's really like, me, right? And I'm on it, sounded just like that. He's like, you're sure you got this? I'm like, no problem, man. Now, I forgot that motorcycles have clutches. This is how bad I am. And I just kick it into gear and it's like sputters. And I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa. And he's like, are you got it? I'm like, no problem, man. I'm riding off all wobbly. And I picture the guy going, oh my gosh, I just killed the pastor, right? And I ride around the block just to make sure I'm good on it. I come back. Jenny's like, you good? I'm like, I'm good. I've got this. And I start riding and this day, it was a windy day in Kansas, so the wind is blowing 50 miles an hour, and it's a crosswind for me. And so I'm riding, I got this helmet on, and I hadn't planned on doing this, so I'm in shorts and a t-shirt, right? And I'm riding, and all I'm thinking is, I am going to die. And I'm riding, and I just have to tell you right now, every single part of my body was puckered. You know what I mean? Like, every single part of my body's puckered. And I'm riding. I would not go above 50 miles an hour. There's all these cars lined up behind me. They're all passing me at like 70. And like, I'm like, my son Simon was in the car behind me. And he said, Dad, I was just so afraid you were going to die. I was like, me too, son, me too. Because when the wind would gust, like already it's 50 miles an hour. When the wind would gust, I'm not kidding. That motorcycle would go, it would just move over like 3 feet. Like, it didn't swerve. It would move over 3 feet. And I was terrified. Actually, this is legitimately what I kept thinking. I kept thinking, drunk people don't die because they're loosey-goosey. Don't get all clenched up. Just relax your body so when you wreck and die, you don't die, all right? That's all I kept thinking was just relax, relax, right? I'm riding this motorcycle. Can I tell you something? I believed 100% in my head, I had faith that I could ride the motorcycle and I had what it took. When I actually got in the situation, I was ye of little faith, right? Because faith is not just a head thing. If it doesn't move into your body, it's worthless. It doesn't mean anything. See, faith is a belief and a trust that moves into your body. And what Paul is saying is this. He's saying that the answer to your problems, the answer to you being locked out, if you have been on the sin side and if you're locked up because of trying to be legalistic, the answer is not to try and be better. The answer is to try and get closer to the one who can make you better, to have faith and move towards him. The answer to unlocking a life with God is not to bust down the door. It's not for you to put more weight into it and hit it harder. The answer is to go to the one who can cut off the locks, to put your faith in him, to let him be the one that you trust. So, Kent, that still feels kind of frou-frou, and I don't know what to do. Right? Like, you didn't tell me what to do. I get it. Like, woo, that's amazing. Have faith, but what the heck do I do? Can I just give you some practicals about this? Because here's what I know. Living in faith is learning to position yourself with God to look for what he has next. So how do you do that? I'm going to give you some practicals right now. Some of you, how many of you ever have to be in a meeting at work? Like, you either in charge of the meeting or you have to be in a meeting. Yeah, it's the worst, isn't it? You're like, oh, another meeting, right? You just hate meetings. Let me tell you, if you're in charge of the meeting and if you're going to the meeting, here's two things that you can do that will actually bring faith into that moment. You're like, Kent, there's no way. Those meetings are straight from hell. There's no way to bring faith into that moment, right? Here's what you do. You bring with you, if you're just going to the meeting, you bring with you an extra water bottle. Maybe you never bring a water bottle, so you just bring one. If you already bring one, bring two. And you set that water bottle in front of you, and guess what? You let that be Jesus' water bottle. Now, and when you're sitting in the meeting, and every time you see that water bottle, you pray and you think, Jesus, I'm yours right now. Whatever you want to do, if there's a word that you want to say, if I could encourage somebody, you start to let that water bottle be something that signals you to look for where God's working. Not, but Kent, I'm in business, I'm in the business world, like that works in the church, but I can't see that working in my place of business. I'm not saying get up and preach a sermon. I'm saying look for where God's working. Maybe one of your coworkers is going through a divorce and they need somebody who's going to care for them and invite them over to your family for dinner and give them a place, and you're going to sit there and you're going to see that water bottle and Jesus is going to be like, hey, Kent, what about them? You know God, when Jesus came, he didn't choose religious people, right? He chose fishermen. He chose tax collectors. He chose business people, not people like me. People like you are his favorite people to choose to use to advance his kingdom. So what have you started doing? And if you're the one in charge of the meeting, take it a step further. Put one extra seat more than what you need in that room. And always have an empty seat. And when you see that seat, look over and just think to yourself in the middle. There's times, you know, where somebody's giving a presentation and you want to snooze anyway. So look over at that seat and think, Jesus, I'm yours. This is your meeting. If you want to do something today, I'm all yours. Here's another thing that you could do. Some of you struggle with lust. And you struggle with looking at somebody who's not your spouse, and your mind and your eye gets attracted to it, and you're like, Kent, how could I bring faith into my body there? Because you're bringing something into your body, right? Your body is physically reacting to what's in front of you. So how could you trigger a faith response instead of a sin response in that moment? Here's an idea for you. What if when your eyes started to get drawn away into something that they shouldn't be drawn into, what if instead of just allowing them to go there, what if you started to use that, and instead of feeling guilty about it, you let it trigger you to start praying for that person. Now, I'm not giving you an excuse to just look at anybody you want and be like, I'm praying right now, don't. But what if when it happens, you did start to pray for them? And what if you took it a step further? What if you let it trigger in you? Because guess what? When you give your attention to that one person and you start to let your heart go lustful after that one person, there are all these other people usually around you who your eyes are totally ignoring, because guess what? In your mind, they're not pretty enough. In your mind, they're not hot enough. In your mind, they're not successful enough. In your mind, they're the outcasts of the world. So what if you took it a step further, and when you felt your body being triggered in that way, you triggered your body to do something else and to turn your eyes to everybody else that you're ignoring and to start praying for them? God, I pray for that woman right now. I feel like I look at her and I see somebody who just looks like she probably needs somebody to care for her. God, I pray for that man right there because he looks like he's probably very lonely. What if you actually let your faith move into your body? Want another easy one? This is the last one I'll give you. You can think of your own after this. What if you, every month, took out $40 in $10 bills, and you put, every week, you put one $10 bill, Sunday after church, you put a $10 bill in your pocket, and all week long, when you put your hands in your pocket and you felt that $10 bill, you would use it as a trigger. God would show you somebody that you could give that $10 bill to. What if you did that? What if you started to walk through your day instead of just looking for what you want, what you care about, and what's the next thing on your schedule? What if you walked through your day going, God, where are you working right now? Who do you want me to bless? Who do you want me to be involved in their life? Obeyed and did it, and you didn't ask questions, you didn't worry about it because it's just $10 anyway, and you just gave it to the person that you felt like God was prompting. What if you did that? What would change in your world if you started to actually take your faith and put it into your body? And your body is all day long, every day, being triggered into anger. It's being triggered into lust. It's being triggered into all these things, these old patterns that you used to live in. And instead of trying to be better, what if you just died to them and you lived in a faith that positioned you to look for what God was doing next? What if you did that? What would change in your world? What would change? Listen, in just a moment, we're going to go, and there's communion at the sides of the room, and you are welcome during this next song to go at any point and go to Jesus. And remember, he came. This is even a faith point where we try to trigger you every week to go back to him, the author and perfecter of your faith. And so as you go over there, don't do this lightly. Don't go over because, oh, it's just the time when we have a little church snack. Go over to Jesus, the one who gave you life and faith. And if you're struggling, say, Jesus, I need your help right now. Can you help me figure out ways to start to trigger my life into a different way of living? Start engaging him like that. If you need, there will be people up front that you can come talk to. If you don't want to talk to somebody and you just want to come up and get on your knees and pray before God, this space is open for you to do that during the song. I also want to say to you, there are some next steps cards in front of you in those chairs. And you can scan code it and do it online. You can fill out the card. If you fill out the card, you can leave it in the boxes. But that's an opportunity. Those cards are there every week because when God moves in your heart, sometimes you need something to kind of prompt you to think through what's next for you. And we wanted you to have those cards as a way, if God's moving, maybe one of those decisions is something you need to do. Maybe for you, you need to take your very first step into faith with Jesus. And you need to say, I want to die to my old life and live to him. This morning, wherever you're at in that journey, don't walk off and not do business with him. This is your time. We're going to sing the song. Whenever you guys are ready, come forward, go to the communion. You can drop those cards if you fill them out in the offering boxes on the sides. You guys stand with us and worship.